Well, good morning, Mara, for one thing. Good morning.
Yes.
It's early. It's 8:30 for me, and it's like 7:30 for you.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you hopping on Skype with me. And
no problem. I got my coffee. I'm good.
I feel like you're more awake than I am, and it's an hour later here. You're gonna teach me some Dungeons and Dragonsing stuff.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Like, this is my favorite thing about playing D&D is teaching people how to play D&D. So really tapped into that
anal
retentive part of my gaming experience here.
That's good. So actually, Jackie and I announced on the gaming podcast this week that we were starting this whole adventure, and but people didn't listen to that. I'm gonna be running a game of D&D, and we're gonna be recording it. It's gonna be myself, Jackie Turner, Bob Ryer, and Talking Movies Brian Verderosa, and possibly a couple others as well. But those are the for sure adventurers that we have right now. None of us have ever played before. Mara has played a lot, and so Mara is gonna be teaching me, doing a little Dungeon Master 101 today, and then. Next week, we're going to do a little player 101 with them. So, first of all, Mara, I have some questions for you, for sure.
Okay.
Because I've been studying up and going through these books and trying to figure out what I need to know. But there's a lot to go over. Even with all this stuff that's out there, what would you say is like the most important thing about being a DM, Mara?
Well, first off, with being a DM, you're kind of in control of the story. You may feel like you're really out of control because of the way the players are handling things, but you're the one that decides what kind of villains or monsters they're going to face, what kind of challenges are going to be there. So, you know, the biggest thing about being a DM is being knowledgeable enough about what you can do and how to kind of roll with the punches that the players are going to throw at you.
Roll with the punches. Okay.
Yeah, the improv part of it.
Improv. All right. So my question to that is, you know, being knowledgeable, there's obviously a lot to know. Obviously, you can't. I mean, the first time I'm playing, I'm not going to know everything sitting down to play. I'm just not going to have all that knowledge readily accessible in my brain. Are there certain like key things, like as far as, you know, rule sets or mechanics of the game that I should be learning first before that I should worry about first?
The easiest thing at least for a new DM going into, and this is what I did, was an established game. So a published game that has all the story done, all the background done, all the monsters you should fight done, all the treasure, all the gold experience that should be out that you're just following along. And that's usually, for me, the best way to start out, because it takes off the pressure of trying to be creative and coming up with new things, unless you concentrate on making sure you get the rules and the mechanics right. And the biggest rule and the biggest mechanic to remember is that D20 and how your skills and abilities play off of that D20 roll.
Right. So, let's say that someone listening to this has never played D&D. They haven't even gone as far as I have and started reading the rule books. What is like that basic, the D20, what is the basic of what you're talking about there?
So when you build your character, you have certain innate abilities. You can be good at athletics, or you can have a good constitution, intelligence, wisdom, things like that. And there are certain skills that pull off of those core characteristics. So like perception, your ability to take in what's in your environment, and that pulls off your wisdom. So you have your stats there, and the D20 roll is, You roll a 20-sided dice, whatever number that is. You add your innate ability to that, and that helps determine whether or not you're successful. And that measure of success is usually determined by the DM. So if the Dungeon Master decides it's a difficult perception check, they may make it like you have to have 17 points or higher to get. Or it could be something that's like totally obvious and it'd be like 5 points or higher and you can get it. So what was the point of rolling? You know, making the characters feel a little bit like, about some things, but that's the core mechanic, and in D&D that also applies to how you battle.
Right.
So whether or not you hit a character, and then how much damage you do to them after. So really understanding the characteristics and the skills, and what the D20 represents and how different numbers on the D20, different results can mean different things.
So when you're doing those checks, right, the sort of published adventures, are they going to tell you, like, if they want to roll a perception check to figure out what's going on in this area, this is what they have to hit? Or are you constantly setting that yourself as the DM, whether you create the game or not?
A lot of times in the published adventures, they do have that there. And sometimes they put a little thing there saying, see if you can encourage your players to check for perception here. Because sometimes they won't. Sometimes they just want to blaze on through.
Right.
Sometimes players will just want to do a perception check whenever, and you make it up.
Okay.
And that's kind of where the fun and the improv comes from, because, you know, you can either say, like, there's nothing here, or you can say there's bloody notches in the wall next to this door.
Right.
And it could mean nothing, or it could just be something interesting, or it could come into play later, but just adding more details and stuff to the story.
Right, right. So that's, I guess, it goes to, like, flowing into one of my other, like, core, like, questions about it is, I think that I've learned this from reading it, but I think other people out there might not be totally clear about this, is that one of the core things I've read is that, like, you know, the rules are there to help guide you, you know, and help the adventure along, but the rules aren't in charge of you. You're in charge of the rules. Is that how you sort of play the game, or are you more strict to the rules?
I'm more of a, if it's fun and if it's funny, we're going to do it.
Gotcha.
So, I had an all girls group. Most of them were new players. I had one person in the group who had played before, and we came up with house rules. And one of them was the PMS bonus. So once a month, each girl could take the bonus for the entire game, which was a +4 to intimidation, attack, and damage across the board. And it was just, it made it more fun. Like, yeah, it was a little bit easier to get whatever was done that week, but it added to the enjoyment for the players and it added to the story. And it was just kind of like an ongoing fun thing we did.
Right. So and I think that's one of the things I've gotten most sort of excited about in, not the PMS bonus in particular, but
but you could have it if you wanted.
It's true. It could. Absolutely. But the idea of how sort of malleable the game is to what you want to do. Now, one of the things I've read that I think helps that even mechanically, there's something called inspiration, right?
Yeah.
So what is inspiration?
So it's for me, you know, awarding inspiration is like, wow, that was really clever. Like, I cannot believe you came up with that. And it really helped me out as a DM. So I'm going to give you this bonus that you can use later. Mm. You can add to a role as you go down. We had, I played 4th edition as well. And I think that was a moment of glory or something like that. I can't remember what we called it back then. But it was the same kind of idea where, hey, that was awesome. I really appreciate what you did. So the DM can award it. And depending on who you're playing with, sometimes the characters can award it to another player. Like, hey, that was awesome. Let's give you the inspiration bonus.
And that's something like, now, again, another mechanic part of it, the inspiration bonus is like, okay, they can kind of save that for later, I guess.
Yeah, you can only use it once.
They can use it once, but they can save it. Like, they don't have to use it on their next roll, right? They could use it later on in the game if they wanted to.
Yeah, you can be very tactical with it. And you can even, I mean, you can't accumulate more than one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what I feel. But you mark it on your character sheet, and you just have that in your back pocket for when you need it.
Right. And for the players themselves, that would be rolling advantage, right? That's what they would do?
Yeah.
Use it?
Yeah, that's – I'm looking – I'm just double-checking on that one because those rules, man. yeah, so –
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Yeah, it's the advantage. And for 5th edition, advantage means you roll D20 twice and you take the higher of the two.
Right.
Which is really good, because if you roll a nat 20, that's usually when things get super interesting. you're just fishing for those nat 20s.
And natural 20 means an actual 20 on the die, not rolling plus any modifiers.
Yeah. So usually, I mean, anything we roll for in game, if I'm controlling it, if there's a nat 20, it's like I just shower them with either information or damage or impossible situations that would never naturally occur in the game.
Right. you know, for me, one thing I would ask you too is, I noticed I was on Amazon and I was buying the three major, you know, core books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they have one of those like official like Dungeon Master screens or whatever.
Yeah.
And on the
inside,
and on the inside of it, it has a lot of information that you might need while running the game. I didn't realize that. I thought it was just like, oh, here's like a arty looking screen that you can put up so people can't see your little notepad or whatever. But it actually has like information on the inside of the thing. Do you think that's something that a first time or a constant DM should be using?
I think it's really helpful because it's the same information that's in like the player's handbook or the Dungeon Master guide, but just pulled up in front of you so you don't have to flip and look for it. So, for example, they have the conditions listed, like fear, paralysis, things like that, so that you know immediately, okay, so this attack caused fear in the character. And you can tell the player real quick, like a reminder, hey, you can't move. You are too afraid. You cannot attack this thing that attacked you.
Right.
And that way it doesn't slow the game down. So you have to look it up and let them know or find page numbers for it. And also has like for difficulty. So like if something is extremely difficult, the player would have to roll like a 21 or something, or like with the skills and everything, have a 21 to get, or something easy. So it's just like quick references and things like that, little charts.
Right, yeah. I mean, which I think I'm absolutely going to get it, because that's kind of stuff, the information I would like to have on hand sort of immediately, because I think it will help also with the improvising, because if I want, there's a situation that I wasn't expecting them to sort of engage in, I'll be able to more easily come up with sort of the mechanical part of it in the background.
And it keeps all your things secret.
Yeah.
So they can't see exactly how much hit points a monster has.
Now let me ask you the question too, like, because I'm sure this differs over DMs, but like, are you not telling the players when they get in a fight with a monster, like how many hit points that monster has, right? You're more creatively trying to express to them how well they're doing.
Yeah. So I usually keep the hit points to myself, although some players like to write down how much damage was done so they can figure out how many hit points a monster has if there's more than one on the board. But usually once the monster gets past halfway, I'll let them know that it's bloodied.
Okay.
And that's their cue to say, okay, we're halfway there. And they know that bloodied equals halfway there. Mm. And if there's like two or three hit points left, I let the characters know that they're bleeding from multiple orifices, or they're doing the back and forth Mortal Kombat move.
Right.
And so that way they understand and they realize like, oh, this monster is like just about to go down. I can either just run and attack it and be done with it, or I can just, you know, let someone else handle it.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny to come to this because obviously, you know, I've played a lot of video games in my life and a lot of role playing games in my life, and almost all of those mechanics come from this game.
And that's something incredible. Like, you're already kind of familiar with it, and you're learning how it's done on paper and pencil, how it's done on a board, and it's pretty enlightening. And to me, it makes role playing games and video games a lot more fun.
It's almost like you're creating the game. Like, you're the one. Except I'm not programming it. I'm just like writing things out. But that's what it feels like in a lot of ways for me when I'm sort of going through this. And Amaro, I want you to ask you about my idea for this adventure, because I have like the starter adventure or whatever, because I got the starter kit a while ago. I think with the group I have, I'm feeling like the sort of like straight fantasy adventure aspect of it is not going to be a favorite among everyone in the group.
Right.
So my plan is to sort of, I have like my own ideas for story and sort of for a campaign and for character stuff and everything like that. But I'm thinking of like using some of the sort of adventure to kind of fill out the middle aspects of the story I'm telling. Do you ever mix and match like that, or do you think that's problematic?
I think it's great.
Okay.
Because the hardest part is finding a way to get the characters involved all the time. Sometimes the story starts to get a little bit boring and people start pulling out their phones and then you've lost them completely. So finding a way to keep constant action and engagement for all players is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like one of those, you do anything you can to get them all involved.
Right.
So, you know, pulling different kinds of, like, pulling an encounter from one thing and adding skill checks from another thing and creating a whole new story that caters to the players a little bit more. I mean, that's kind of the challenge of the DM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's and it's kind of it's daunting, but it's also very exciting, mm-hmm. you know, for me because I love sort of creating things like that, and whether it be obviously this is my first time doing this, but you know, writing a story or you know, filming a video or whatever, I love getting that those reactions and playing around with that stuff because it's an interesting role being the DM. I'm already seeing without even doing it is because you're both sort of like. A storyteller and the director and the referee. It's a very crazy mix of things you have to do at one time.
Mm-hmm. As far as like catering to the players, I do have like one little thing that I did once that I thought was like so much fun. The group of girls I was playing with, they were very silly and fun and things like that. So we never did anything too high stakes or anything like that. So we had a house party for the characters where it was a series of skill checks to make their house party awesome and give them opportunities to hook up with non-player characters or get into drinking games and fights and stuff like that within their own house party. And it was just one of those things where I don't know if any published adventure has a house party mechanic in it. I'm sure someone does, but it was like, hey, they'd be into this. Let's try it and see what happens. And just building off that D20 mechanic where, so this is your third drink of the night, roll a constitution check and let's see if you're drunk or not. And if they were, then there were different consequences that went on with their social interactions for the rest of the night. But, you know, it's not strictly high fantasy.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that's something that also, I think from the outside, I think I thought that as well until I really started reading about it and listening to other people talk about it or play it. I think that's what I always thought it was. Mm-hmm. So when you sit down, Mara, when you're like, okay, I'm gonna DM a game, right? What are sort of your first couple of steps that you have when you sort of come up with either what published adventure you're gonna use or how you're gonna start creating your own adventure and stuff like that?
Yeah. So looking at the players first off and seeing what their experience level. So they have like no characters at all. You have to start at level one. So finding a published adventure that starts out at level one. Mm. So that's kind of where I would start. So with the group I have now, we started with Horde of the Dragon Queen, which was the first published adventure book that D&D put out with their fifth edition. And it was one of those that was super, super easy to run. You're dealing with dragons and it's a two-part adventure. So once we finished Horde of the Dragon Queen, it filtered right into the Rise of Tiamat, which is this hellish nine-headed dragon that lives in hell and is trying to be resurrected. And our players had to figure out how to not make that happen. So, you know, looking at the players and what they need, what they're interested in, reading through the adventure and seeing, okay, they're going to be really into this, or this may be a boring week. We may have to modify what's going on here, but make sure that we get the main story element and things like that. Building an adventure is a little bit harder. It's not my favorite thing to do. I'd much rather go with published adventures and things like that, and mostly because that's a time factor for me. I'm more of I want things laid out in front of me. I want things easy reference, stuff like that, which, you know, makes me very like anal retentive player where it's like, I don't know how to do this monster. Where is it? And flipping out about stuff like that.
So. And sort of like when the players are building their characters, and we'll get into the actual mechanics of building the character. When we do the player 101, obviously, but as the DM, when the players are sort of building their characters, do you kind of, do they go off and do it like themselves and bring the characters to you? Or are you guys kind of doing it together? What, how do you usually do that?
I'd much rather do it as a group because when you have, ideally you have one DM and four players.
Right.
And each player fills a different role. So you want someone on your team who is the leader character, who has those abilities to build up the other characters. you want someone who is a fighter, who can do the big, huge damage and slip out. So that's kind of like your, like all of the fighter characters and stuff like that. And you want a defender, someone who attracts enemies to them and has high armor class and the ability to protect other characters in game. And then you want the magician-y character who can hit a bunch of minions all at once and do that magic stuff. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, that's basically with, when you're looking at fighting encounters, that's kind of the player breakdown you want. But you also want to make sure that each player feels like they have a role in the role-playing part of it. You might want someone who has a high intelligence and their story background is researching ancient history stuff. Or you might have a character who's more religious and can fulfill that role, or a character that's stealthy. Mm-hmm. And making sure that not every character is some sort of like half elf rogue. You want that variety, and you want to encourage players to kind of look at what other people want to do and how they can make themselves stand out and be different and play a different way.
Right, absolutely. And I know for me personally, I think that the one of the things I'm very interested in as far as going through a game is I'll call it the Game of Thrones aspect, I guess, which would be okay. Like, which would just be like, not necessarily like, oh, deceit and all that kind of stuff, but just having characters who have like natural disagreements with each other. Because I think mm-hmm. it's more interesting for me if when we're making decisions or running stuff, you know, that there's like kind of natural sort of disagreements between the different characters, whether it be because one's an elf and one's a dwarf, or, you know, because one is you know, a cleric and is very holy, and one is like a complete another, you know, atheist or whatever. I would like to see like those sort of things in between the people that are playing.
And you can help encourage that when people are making their characters by saying, don't just make a character. Don't just put numbers on a page. Mm-hmm. Think about the background and how that character got to where they are now.
Yeah.
And having them write it down and then give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't give it to other players, but if they give it to you, then you as the DM can read through their backgrounds and start inserting things into the game that pulls off that. Like, you have a character that maybe left some sort of order. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they might have named someone or had something distinctive about that order, and you can insert it into the game later so that character can start freaking out about being followed or having the order come after them, or, you know, things like that. Or like one character might kill their sensei or something like that, and then have the ghost follow them around or something like that. And, you know, it's just like figuring out their backgrounds and then catering the game to them again.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was curious about that sort of known to me but not known to other players factor of it, because I didn't know how sort of I guess anything's allowed, but how common or if that was something that was readily done in a game like this.
I usually try to keep things hidden.
Okay.
Because it forces the characters to interact with each other in game and find those things out.
Interesting. And as far as just like the, you know, so obviously they're going to fill out these character sheets, which will have all of their actual, you know, statistical stuff going on them. Are you like having copies of those character sheets for yourself, Mara, like in like, you know, by yourself on your Dungeon Master area, so you can sort of reference more easily? Or are you kind of leaving it up to them to sort of, when they do their rolls or when they're with their hit points, having them track it themselves?
They're tracking it themselves.
Okay.
And some of the players I've played with are good police officers mm-hmm. in that manner. like I actually played with my brother once, and he kept dealing these massive, crazy, crazy damages. And I'm like, dang, how did he do 60 something damage in one hit? And finally, like, the other players were like, give me your sheet. And they like look through it and like, you're reading the rules wrong. And, you know, just kind of like trying to figure that stuff out in game, because I'm just sitting there going like, la di da, 75 points, dang, you killed a monster in one hit. So, you know, I do kind of leave it up to them, but since, you know, the learning experience is making it open to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Like, if you say something like, all right, everyone roll for initiative, and it's okay for a player to go, what is that again, how do I do that, and eventually the other players will help the player who's not getting it as quickly you know, kind of helping them, pointing it out in their character sheets and stuff like that.
Right. We should say that initiative, which was something tomorrow when I was reading the books, even though they, like, you know, the books are pretty good at teaching you how to play the game, I'd say, but, like, they throw words out there sometimes where I think they just expect you to know and you don't know them. So, like, initiative is order of battle.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you have the player's role for when they when they go in order of battle, and it's basically just whoever rolls the highest goes first and so on down, right?
Yeah, it pulls off of your speed or your dexterity.
Mm, okay.
So how quickly you react to things.
Okay.
So you enter in a battle, and the characters that react the quickest get to go first, and then everyone rolls, and you roll your monsters into it too, so that you have an order of battle. And I make that public, so that everyone can see where they are in the battle order.
Gotcha.
And they can prepare, like, all right, so there's two people in front of me. I need to think about what to do and a backup plan in case something happens with the previous two turns. So.
Right. And as far as, like, the monsters, right, or when they attack, an initiative. Now, correct me wrong, but if there's, like, let's say, like, a group of, like, five goblins that you're fighting, and then also, like, a bugbear or something that you're fighting, as a DM, you're going to roll one initiative for all of the goblins, right?
Yes. So, like, all the goblins will act in one turn, and then all the bugbears, or the one bugbear, will act in a different turn.
Right. So you'd roll separate initiative for each one of them.
Yeah.
Now, as a DM, how... Because this is the thing I'm kind of least interested in as far as running the game. Not the battle part, but this next part I'm going to talk about, which is, like, the, like, supplies aspect of the game. Like, I don't really care about, like, I don't want my player to have to go shopping for stuff, you know, for, like, basic supplies, and worry about, like, oh, we don't have enough, you know, food to get, you know, through this trek. Like, I'm not really concerned about that stuff. How often do you kind of focus on that stuff, or do you usually kind of leave it behind?
I mostly leave it out because it can get very tedious.
Yeah.
So I assume, like, if you're an archer, you have enough arrows all the time.
Right. Yeah.
like, I'm not worried about your arrow thing. If you have one dagger and you throw it, yeah, that's going to be a problem because you just threw your one dagger.
Right. Totally.
And you have to go and get it. Mm-hmm. But with food and stuff like that, I mean, if I want to make a survival story, I may concentrate on that. Like, if the characters are shipwrecked or lost in the woods, I may say, hey, y'all, you haven't eaten in 3 days. Your irritability is going up. Your decision making is going down. You need to find food and you need to use your survival tactic. So I might, you know, make a skill check out of it. But general adventure stuff, it's like, that's so boring. I don't want to think about, like, do I have a bedroll or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
I may make the characters buy them up front
just
to emphasize, like, all right, everyone's got supplies. All right, let's go.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not going to concentrate on that. And of course, if they come to a town, I do make them decide where to stay.
Okay.
I might present two different options for inns. Like, one's nice and it's a little bit more expensive, and one's really grimy and dirty and they're, you know, or prostitutes out front. Which one do you want to sleep in? And then go from there.
Right. But that's more like fun, like, flavor or narrative. That's not like, you have this much gold and you must go and buy, like, you know, this stuff or whatever. I like you said, like, having an archer and being like, you're out of arrows does not seem like a fun mechanic to me.
People might find it challenging because, you know, they have to find out how to fight without arrows. Like, you know, like Hawkeye, and just start hitting people with your bow.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those, like, if you're a new player, you want to keep the action going. You don't want to make it too challenging. It's that balance there. So with more experienced players, you might introduce more of that survival tactic or the supplies and things like that. But for new players, you're still learning the game. You're still learning the mechanics. And it's more important to make it fun and enjoyable and focus on the creative aspect of it than the nitty-gritty rules.
One of the things I've read everything yet, but one thing I've been kind of just completely flummoxed on, Mara, is the leveling up stuff, because I haven't really found anything that's, like, concrete about how you level characters up, and is that totally your discretion as the DM? Are you like picking how much experience points players get for doing certain things, or is there set experience points to do for certain things?
Well, with 5th edition, you have two options. You can either do, like, set levels, like, okay, to go from level one to level two, we're going to do two adventures and then you level up. Mm. Like, everyone goes up to level two. Or you can award experience points. And those experience points, like in the monster guide, it tells you how much experience is available when you kill the monster.
Right.
And so you can just add up all the monsters they fought, divide it out between the players. I also add in experience points at my discretion for like skill challenges or for having fun in bars or, you know, things mm-hmm. like that, just general role playing stuff, and then divide it out by the players. And it's just one of those things where if it feels like it's taking way too long to get to the next level, just for me, I'm just like, I'm gonna add a little bit more experience points. I'll make them do something more with it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause you want it to obviously people to feel like they're progressing and moving. Cause that obviously probably keeps them involved in what's happening. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the new addition, I think, you accelerate through those first couple levels pretty quickly.
Mm.
So like, level one's kind of boring, blah, but I'm already level two. What? I'm level three now. So you're going faster and faster, and you kind of plateau a little bit, and it's a little bit more difficult to get to the next level. So it's the fewer experience points to get to the next level early on, and then it becomes more of a challenge later.
Right. And I guess, again, that's another probably challenge, right, of writing your own adventure would be balancing it correctly so that, you know, the monsters and stuff that they're fighting later on, whenever they're fighting them, are appropriate for kind of like their level and stuff like that. I would assume that was a difficult thing to sort of map out far in advance.
Yeah, one time they killed a dragon way too early. Like, I'm like, I'm not ready for you to do that. Why? So we kind of all just like looked at each other and was like, do you guys want another dragon to fight? The player's like, yeah, let's do another one. So I'm like, okay. So the mate of the dragon shows up, and I was really vindictive. I was really mad about them doing something I wasn't ready for. So I made it like an ancient white dragon, which is like way out of their league. And what ended up happening was like Matt's character sacrificed himself to at least distract the dragon enough so another character can open a portal, send that dragon in there for 10 seconds, and then run away. Because that dragon was killing them all. Like, I have to pick up unconscious bodies and run away. I'm just sitting there going like, okay, that was too difficult. Keep that in mind. So it is hard, like, you know, coming up with something to react to those kinds of things or developing new adventures and stuff like that. But it's one of those, like, you know, if you're playing with a group of friends and you're all new, you can be like, hey, you know what? That was a mistake. Forget that ancient white dragon I just introduced. It's just a baby dragon. Y'all can handle that.
How do you deal as a DM with death of player characters?
I've never had a player character die on me.
Okay.
I, as a player, have died before. It sucks. But somehow one of the other players I was at the table with rolled a nat 20 on a prayer and brought me back to life. Like, that was the DM's decision. Because when a player dies, it's dead and you have to create a new player and bring them up to speed, which, you know, it's not a big deal if you're level one or level two, because the new player is somewhat close to that experience. But if you're like level 4, 5, 6 and you've got a new player introduced, you know, you can either decide to have that person start out at level one and just be outclassed by the table, or, you know, let them build up to a level 5 or something at the bottom rung,
right,
so that they can at least have fun while they're playing.
Right. Because and this is something that I didn't even think about, Mara, before I started reading these books and stuff like that, is that, you know, it's not like, I mean, all groups are different, right? But I guess, like, you might go through an adventure with these characters you create, and then when you play the next adventure, you're often playing the same character again, right?
Right. Or you can make a new one, or you can just, I've had players mid-game want to create a new player. And I allow that, because if you're brand new, you don't know exactly what you want in the game.
Right.
So the character you make on day one may not be what you want from the game on day 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, you're a level 3 cleric. Go ahead and make a level 3 paladin instead.
Right. Okay. That's that's good to know, actually. That's very good to know. Yeah. I mean, Mara, do you have any other tips for me or anything?
Just, yeah, you know, one of those things is, it's like improv. Like, if a character suggests something, go like, yes. Mm. Okay, how can we do that? And just allowing for those kinds of things, and not being terribly offended when the plan goes wrong.
Right.
Or if, you know, you had like this big adventure and the characters decide to go down a different route, it's like, okay, not gonna get mad about it. We're going to be okay. How can I make this work? So just remembering to be flexible in the story and really understand the core mechanic of the game and how that can help with the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, I kind of wrote, I mean, I think they'll change as I sort of get more familiar or decide how I want to be differently or whatever. But I wrote like some like core tenets for myself down on a piece of paper. Like these are like the rules I want to follow for myself. You know, about you know, when I get into things about how it's going, and it's cool. One of the things I'm most excited about is sort of like that inspiration aspect, because the thing I'm honestly most interested in is like seeing people be creative about the way that they go about whatever is laid out. You know,
I have a pretty common thing I do with my games, and you're welcome to use it as too.
All right, I might steal it.
It's pretty cool. I give like vanity experience points, you know, like 5 or 10 points here and there, and something that's like can make a difference, but it's still kind of cool every time someone makes a relevant Star Wars reference in game. So if there's a quote and it makes sense, like if a player goes to a bar and they see someone they like and they're going, "How you doing, Chewbacca?" Like, yeah, perfect. 5 XP. I love it. And sometimes that extends also to any Lord of the Rings references or things like that. But just, you know, getting people to think about like, okay, what would be really funny to do at this moment, or what's something that would happen. And also I do bribe the DM night, which correlates with my birthday. And it's like, who can bring the best food, the best treats, things for me to eat while I'm playing? And your character will be rewarded in game. But it's just kind of, you know, just having fun with it and, you know, just getting people to just be involved.
Right.
But you can use those if you want.
I definitely, I don't know if I'll use the Star Wars reference one more, but I'll definitely, I think I'll be able to adapt it to my group's tastes.
Yeah.
Not that my group doesn't like Star Wars, because come on. Everyone's got to like Star Wars. But yeah, I'm gotta tell you, I'm very excited. One of the things I will say is, I think for me, you know, not that I didn't bite off more than I could chew at all, but I had to like readjust my perspective when I got the 3 books, because I just sort of started reading the Dungeon Master's Guide like it was a book that you would read from cover to cover, and yeah. There's so much in it, and it's like, I was getting so overwhelmed reading it, because I was like, there's so much here, there's so much there, so much here, and you know, honestly, it's not like it's written pretty well, but it's one of those things where it's like, it's more like an encyclopedia or like reference book where you can go and pick things out that you need to deal with, rather than something you should, I feel like you need to feel like you have to like know cover to cover. Yeah,
it's better with the Dungeon Master Guide to be familiar with what's in it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to know all the background of all the gods in the world.
Right.
I don't need to know about the different planes of existence. I don't need to know that stuff. I'm more interested in basics of games and things like that. So I'll take my post-it notes and my flags and just mark those for reference later. And then I'll go through and read the player's handbook.
Right.
Because that's what the player's going to be more familiar with. And that's the basics of the rules and things like that are in there. So it's better to know the player's handbook front to back, and know where to find things in the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Right, right. And I will say, too, that the Monster Manual is an amazing little, amazing book.
It is so much fun.
It's crazy. There is text for every single thing that's in that book.
Yeah, it's like where they live.
Yeah.
Whether or not you can reason with a monster.
Yeah.
Just like, you just open it up to any random page, and you're just... so much stuff. Like, I just opened up and I found a drider, and there's variants on the drider, so you can make them cast spells. I love going through the dragons page. That's one of my favorites, and learning about good dragons versus bad dragons, how the different colors react to things, how the different metal kind of dragons react to things. And there's also a section on just boring animals, like a crocodile or a cat and stuff like that. And so that way you can start introducing, like, oh, a cat is following the group. Okay, we have a new cat now. So it's just having fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that fun point too, I know what I'm gonna do because I'm this kind of person. But Mara, do you do like voices and stuff for the NPCs?
Yeah, but I only have one voice.
Can we hear it? Can we hear your voice?
Hey, welcome to my inn. We have lots and lots of ale. It's really bad, and usually it just breaks everyone's character and they start laughing. I'm like, no, pay attention. This is really important stuff. Would you like to buy a sword? And so it's bad. I can't do voices.
That's really funny. Do you try to encourage your players and stuff to do like sort of role playing voices?
Depends on, because I have a couple that really get into it and have a couple who don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I let those that want to do their character more in depth, more, you know, role playing stuff. I've played with groups where I was a player and it was kind of the norm for everyone to react the way their character did.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I got used to playing like that. And I've played with groups where they just want to tell you what the character thinks instead of saying what the character thinks.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
it kind of, you know, depends. It's a lot more fun when you're being kind of silly or you're being kind of humorous with your character. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's really amazing to have a character with low intelligence playing because the player knows that the character doesn't know better. Like, everyone's like really wary of a door and the low intelligence character might just go open the door and, you know, just they're really action oriented. So, when everyone's making their players, maybe encourage a character who might not be like on top of things or might be a little bit of a ditz or,
right.
Kind of, you know, dense about things like that.
Yeah. In sort of preparation for this, cause I think a lot of times the best way to learn stuff like this is to like, I mean, watch or like experience people playing it themselves because it's way easier to see the rules sort of distilled down into action than to mm-hmm. than to actually just read them. And there's a bunch of podcasts out there that do kind of actual play D&D matches. And I've listened to one called The Adventure Zone, which is this group of I know a couple of the hosts from other things. They actually write and do stuff for a video game website that I really like called Polygon. They definitely have, they have a character who the guy's like, I'm making a character choice. My character's an idiot. And yeah. So the way he reacts to everything is like, it is really dumbly, which is a really, it's made it very entertaining to listen to. So I can definitely see how that would be in like a good part of the whole thing.
I've played with the character who was obsessed with fire. Like he was a magician and he had fireball. And be like, I don't know what to do in this situation. Fireball! And like, great, now we have to escape this forest before we're all burned to death.
Right.
And the player would just like, meh, shrug their shoulder and be like, let's go.
Yeah.
But just kind of like, you know, encouraging players to have a quirk or have something that almost like a trademark response to things. I mean, it makes the story fun. It makes it a little bit predictable on your end so that you know, like, okay, this character is totally going to set this building on fire. What can I do?
Right. Yeah, I think it's good for me to hear you say that because I want to encourage the players to. I don't think that the player group that I have will do this, but you know, I think it's boring if players just want to make like kind of like perfect, you know, characters.
Right.
I don't want them to be. I want them to have flaws because that's what makes things funny and fun to do. So I'll definitely try to encourage that. I mean, and obviously you're going to be talking to them next week when we do the player 101.
Yeah.
So you can also encourage them in those ways as well. But that's all the questions I have for you, Mara, unless you have any parting words for me.
Be prepared. have some stuff in your back pocket to use. You know, sometimes it's helpful to write down things on index cards, like some favorite monsters. So you can just pull those out real quick in case you need them instead of finding them in the manual. You know, again, cater to the players, figure out what they want to do. If they want to do more fighting or more role playing or more kind of skill checks and things like that. And it's a learning experience and it's really fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I think I at least know that Jackie is also very excited about it because we've been talking about it a lot. And it was funny because we have the core three that are going to do it. And but my wife has sort of been on the fence about doing it.
Oh, you got to talk her into it.
And Jackie's partner, Jay, has also been on the fence about doing it. And my wife and I had dinner with them on Saturday, and I had just gotten the books in. So I brought the books over to show Jackie, the Monster Manual and the Player's Guide. And once I opened the books and started talking about it and showing them pictures and looking over stuff and going over stuff, both my wife and Jay got like super excited about it, and they changed from like, I don't know if I want to do it, to I'm gonna watch your guys' first play session and then I'll see if I want to do it or not.
And that's so how it is.
Yeah, I think they're both leaning towards it for sure. So I'm excited about that. So I think it's something that, like I said, seems very daunting to people on the outside. But I think once they sort of see how it works and how fun it can be, I think it's going to be something that a lot of people are going to be into. And I hope that people listening to this helps them be a little less daunted. The next episode helps them be a little less daunted. And then when they see how big of fools we make of ourselves in the actual play session, they'll be even less daunted about starting to play the game. But thank you, Mara, for taking time so early for you. I really, really appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next week for the Player's Guide. We'll